Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Güter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar. Oh!
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Today we'll be discussing all of the action from a chaotic, dramatic match day 13. It's a shame that the international break has spread up what has been an incredible Zweite Bundesliga season so far. But one thing is for certain, once this final break subsides, we'll have four more entertaining match days to take us till the end of the calendar year. I'm your host Matthew Karagic and it is an absolute pleasure to have your company and to take you through all of the games from match day 13. And we'll start our journey at the Millantor. Group 1 might as well be called Group Nord, as we'll be focusing on six teams in that area of the country. The opening game takes us to the Millantor as St. Pauli host Hannover. St. Pauli in first place, looking to extend their lead at the top of the table. Hannover really trying to strengthen their credentials as a potential promotion candidate. And look, this was a really interesting game. It ended 0-0. It was the only 0-0 of the match day. But it still gets top billing as it was in terms of importance. It was one of the top three games worth talking about. St. Pauli did have a goal disallowed for offside with the video assistant referee. Afalayan's leg was judged to have been offside, and that was a correct decision. But yeah, it was quite interesting of how little we saw of Hannover going forward and creating. They had two shots on goal for the entire game, and the first shot came just with 12 minutes to go of normal time. And they just, they were very harmless. They didn't really get into good positions. It did seem like there was a bit of a disconnect between the wide midfield players and the attacking three. They couldn't get into really good areas, but a lot of that has to do with great midfield structure and putting pressure on, and that's something that St. Pauli did extremely well in this game. They did see Eric Smith return from injury, and he was the man of the match for mine in this game. Really controlled it at both ends of the ground. We know how good he is in possession, starting the build-up play, and you can see St. Pauli really were able to dictate what they wanted to do in the transitional phases and progressing the ball into the final third. Had a harder time creating good scoring chances. Zila had a couple of good saves in this game. But yeah, it was a bit disappointing from St. Pauli. They're almost missing the juice a little bit, missing that clinical touch. We know how good they've been of late, especially with Jonas Eggestein. He had one of the better chances in this game, but that was saved by Ron Robert Zila. What it means in terms of the table position for St. Pauli is they still remain top. And we'll talk about what the ramifications of results elsewhere meant in their hopes for promotion. I think with Hannover, still, I'll probably harp on it for the remainder and when we've got different guests on as well. Look, their big game was last week against Braunschweig, and they absolutely destroyed De Leeuwen and probably should have won that game by a lot more than they did. In this one, it was clear that defense was the modus operandi. They wanted to really limit what St. Pauli were going to be doing in the offensive thirds. And for the most part, they did a really good job of that. They didn't give up too many high-quality scoring chances in the final third in the box. And look, that for a goalkeeper, that's a dream. You want to be in situations where you're not under immense pressure. You're not going to have the intensity of dealing with shots coming in from all sorts of areas. There was one scene towards in the second half, actually might have been in the first half, where Philip True, who scored that goal against Karlsruhe a week ago, looked like he had a moment where he dribbled through and the ball cannoned off Yannick Deem's arm, and we were a bit unsure, and referee Robert Hempel decided to not give a penalty, and ultimately it was a correct decision to not do so. But there was a bigger talking point off the field. So there was a massive incident in the away section of the Nordkurve of the Millantor. Tensions came to a head between the travelling Hanover fans and police, which you never like to see. We saw irritating gas pepper spray used by police, and given the proximity of the Millantor being at capacity, a lot of people who were very much in the firing zone of those sort of attacks. 15 fans were injured, along with 17 police officers hurt. And the unfortunate part of this situation is that obviously there'll be an investigation from the DFB. St. Pauli also calling for to investigate this, given that their next home game is going to be against Hamburg in December. It's really sad because both sides sort of in many ways not taking responsibility for their own actions, pointing the finger the other way. I'm just going to have a look quickly. So the police have said that this is in many ways this is not really fan culture. This is, it's violence. I think it was Hamburg Police Chief Falk Schnabel who said, "I have no understanding whatsoever of the rioters' behaviour. We are not dealing here with fan culture, but with violent criminals who must be held accountable." Whereas, Fanhilfe Hannover were of the belief that the deployment of the police in that particular situation was just unnecessary. So it is going to be interesting to see what happens there. We know Hannover last season, one of the most heavily fined clubs when it came to fan behaviour. But it was really sad, I think, in general, that it became quite violent, and you could see that it just didn't become a particularly safe place for fans to enjoy the football. But it's a tough line to tone. I'm not here to pick sides, but if you want to like know what's going on and what happened, there's a really good article sort of explaining it with NDR, which came out yesterday, but also really good perspective from the Millantorn, who obviously do a lot of great stuff. Mike gave his perspective of the sequence of events, and how it all sort of materialized throughout the evening. So it is interesting. I wonder if we'll see some fines, but yeah, it's kind of a shame that it had to end that way. In the manner that it did, because it was it took away from what was a pretty tense game of football that Hanover fans should have been quite happy to come home with a point, but instead we've got this unfortunate situation. So Hanover return home on Friday night. They've got Hertha. St. Pauli will make the journey to Hansa Rostock, so it's another big game for them, and they'll be hoping they can continue this unbeaten run of form that has led them to the top of the table. Let's make our move to the Holstein Stadion. Holstein Kiel taking on Hamburger SV. It has been a hoodoo club. There's no doubt about it. There's no denying it. It has been a difficult period for Hamburg when they take on Kiel in the Zweite Bundesliga. Heading into this game, they've met 12 times, and only once have Hamburg taken all 3 points. Kiel have only won 3 times themselves, but in what you'd expect is quite a disparity between the two sides, it is expected that Hamburg would get the wood over their northern neighbours. This game was great. It ebbed and flowed. Both teams really went for it. There was plenty of opportunities. But it was Kiel. I think it was Kiel who were willing to relinquish possession and create with meaningful, aggressive, transitional play, knowing that Hansi Kardunic, Ramos, the two centre-back pairings, have been up and down. Much like this game, for example. So Kiel gets the penalty, the foul by Miro Muheim on Lewis Holtby. Clear penalty. Steven Skripski scores his 4th goal of the campaign. After halftime, Kiel gets the 2nd goal through Benedict Pickler. It's a great ball from Holtby. Pickler turns Ramos inside out, and it's a high-powered finish to make it 2-0. The feeling was that when Robert Glatzel scored on 71 minutes, that Hamburg had a way back. They had started to put the pressure on Kiel, and the resistance was buckling. they would get the second goal. Yata with the assist, Glatzel with the header. And 2-2 with 10 minutes of normal time to go, there was definitely the feeling that Hamburg could go and win this game. That feeling was basically gone 3 minutes later. Jan Vita up with the assist, Finn Porat, the ex-Hamburg players, combining to give Kiel the lead, and then Jonas Stürner got his second goal of the campaign to make it 4-2, and Marcel Rapsod moves in to third place in the standings. There's not really a lot to like about what Hamburg did defensively. They were good at ball possession, getting the ball into the final third. They had their chance. Glatzel was extremely lively in this game. But the moment the ball gets into transition, they lose possession. You know, I get the feeling that this system just doesn't really suit that pairing of Ramos and Hanzi Kardunic. They get exploited quite easily. The wide players like to be aggressive, get forward, so you lose Muheim in defensive transition. And you just... It's unbelievable, because this was their opportunity to really put the pressure on St. Pauli. And they laid a goose egg, and I know that there was several Hamburg fans who were just unbelievably disappointed with how they played in this game. They were just so poor defensively. And that's a credit to Kiel, because we know Kiel have been over the last few seasons under Marcel Rapp. They've got the high-octane offense. But much like several teams in the division, they concede their fair share of goals. But they're still, their big thing is going to be finding who's their true number nine, who's their true attacking pair. We saw Pickler, Skripski, and Arp in an offensive three, and that worked really well. Arp was brilliant. I know he didn't score in the game. He was brilliant. He was fantastic at sort of redistributing the ball. The assist for the third goal was glorious, and maybe this is the way to go for them, to have the offensive three in attacking. They very much matched what Hamburg were doing setup wise. Once they get forward though, they're very quick, they're versatile, dynamic. But the substitutions also worked well for them as well. You know, bringing in Porat, Stürner. And it's the younger players that are helping to drive this team. You know, Tom Rauter didn't start this game, but he came on and was really solid in the minutes he came on. So there is a lot to like about what Kiel are doing. The break probably is less... Well, it's opportunistic for them. They can really build from what they're doing. And the fixtures coming up for them, Kaiserslautern away, Wiesbaden, and then Fortuna Düsseldorf, they are tricky games. But they're winnable. With the way that they're playing and the way they're set up, and the way that they've got their midfield group working, Zander and Holtby have been so good together. Like, they play off each other in such versatility. And Zander, you know, having a player like him as your leader has really worked for them. He's showcased great leadership, and those two together are really part of the driving force as to why Kiel are in their situation. So for Hamburg, Eintracht Braunschweig on Friday night, which will be a game they are expected to win. We're going to talk about them in a second. Then it's the derby game against St. Pauli when we return from the break, when we get to the second group of those games. And then Paderborn on Saturday afternoon. Tricky games, given the circumstances. I think the break comes at a really good time for them. They are hurting at the defensive end. Whether they get Sebastian Schonlau back. Stephen Ambrosius also missed this game. That they really need to get a bit healthy at defensive end, and we'll see what their outlook is as we head towards the end of the Hinrunde. Speaking of Eintracht Braunschweig, let's discuss them. It was a massive week for the club on Hamburger Straße. New coach announced in Daniel Schoening. Schoening, of course, was Arminia Bielefeld's manager for a chunk of last season. And a very similar situation he enters into in Braunschweig. Though the difference, I think, between the two sides is expectations that with Braunschweig are rock bottom. They're not expected to survive at this rate, whereas Bielefeld, who had a much stronger squad, better infrastructure, they were expected to survive, and well, they didn't. He gets his first crack with Braunschweig against one of his former clubs, Osnabrück, the club that he left to go to Arminia Bielefeld last season. And what a fascinating game this was. Two sides, the bottom two, battle of the basement, you know, and the scoreline is perhaps a little bit misleading. Because from my perspective, Braunschweig were the better team in this game. Yes, they were willing to relinquish possession, but when they got on the counter, when they won possession and they got into those transitional phases, there were signs. There were positive signs in the game. And what they loved doing is getting balls into the box from wide areas. And their two goals, two of their three goals came from that. The opening goal came from Yoan Gomez. It was a, you know, it needed a little bit of assistance, but it got there in the end. Doncor got the second goal, but that was in the second half. In between that, there was a penalty for Osnabrück, Ron Torben Hoffman fouling Kleinhansel. Yeah, it was there. It was clumsy from Hoffman. I don't think the intent was not to stomp on the back of Kleinhansel's foot, but it happened. Mikael Cuisance got the goal, and then Cuisance was sent off for a second yellow. So there was a free kick for Braunschweig. Cuisance just doesn't get out of the way, and Kaufmann just punts the ball into him. And the referee probably didn't want to give the second yellow, but unfortunately those were the rules, and he had to do it. And Doncor gets the goal. It was a bit lucky. The initial effort was saved by Grillen, and Doncor was there to pick the pieces up. And you felt with the man advantage, surely they're not going to lose from here. You just, no way. They're not going to lose from here. And they can see the penalty. Doncor handles the ball. It's unlucky because, you know, there's no intent to handle the ball. Once the hand gets away from the body in the box, it's a really good chance you're going to get a penalty. And the referee had a look at it. Referee being Florian Lechner. Yep. And Erik Engelhardt steps up. He scores to make it 2-2, his fifth goal of the campaign. And they're, you know, the ecstatic VfL Osnabrück bench. You know, you could see the passion and what was such an important game for them. But unfortunately, it was all for naught for them. In the 8th minute of stoppage time, Ermin Bacacic, who'd only signed a couple of weeks ago as a free agent, he gets the goal. It's a 3-2 win, but this game was not, of course, without its controversy, being that the VAR check for potential offside on Ermin Bacacic took over 5 minutes, which is ludicrous, but we found out we know why. So supposedly the VAR check took this amount of time because the camera that they needed to use to confirm whether offside was in fact in play here didn't work. So we've had VAR for, I think, 7 years total, but in the Zweite Bundesliga, I think it's like about 4 or 5. Yeah, this can't happen. We can't have these situations. I know it can be preventable, but sometimes these things happen, but given we should have more angles to see what's going on, whether it's at the other side of the pitch or however, you need more if we're going to continue to work this. So they stuck with the original decision, which was a goal was given on the field, and an absolute sheer devastation for Tobias Schweinsteiger and Osnabrück, who were unconsolable at the end of the game. So rewatching all the highlights package and getting through what was happening. So Sportschau showed the line, and supposedly the line is that Erik Engelhardt's back foot, his left foot, is keeping Bacacic. Like, it's so fine. And the angle's not straight. It's a terrible angle, and it's heartbreaking for Osnabrück. But I don't think they deserve to win the game. I thought Braunschweig were much more superior. They were dangerous going into the final third. They looked up for it. Similar sort of managerial bounce for Bielefeld last season when Schöning came in, and they just played with such energy and freedom. Their willingness to get forward. I mean, they had 18 shots. 9 of them were on target. They were good. like they weren't great on the ball. You know, their passing, they weren't particularly strong passing, and Osnabrück were good at in the pressing moments. But yeah, I think it's a much needed change for them. It gets them off the bottom of the table. The question being, okay, so they've got time before they prepare for Hamburg. Then you've got Greuther Fürth and VfB Wiesbaden, both teams who are in good form. So will be quite interesting. Osnabrück, on the other hand, they got Magdeburg. And if we're talking about big games coming back from the break, now this is being recorded Monday lunchtime Adelaide time. So there's been no news on what's going to happen for in sort of a coaching change, if there's going to be for either side. But that game is massive. You know, Magdeburg, who we'll talk about at the end of Group 3, in short, they've been in an unbelievable rut. And Osnabrück, they've been in so many games. Even if they haven't played particularly well, they've stuck around. They've made it very difficult, uncomfortable. But they've so often they've been on the end of the wrong end of tight losses, late goals. And you just wonder, the season could be so different for them. Like they haven't been great. Defensively, they've been an absolute mess. In spite of this, they've made games uncomfortable for teams. They've just hung around, but they've been a bit ineffective. So we'll see what happens when they return. We'll take our first break, and on the other side, we're going to head to the Feldsens Arena when Schalke hosted Elversberg. After two consecutive wins, Schalke were hoping to make it a third when they welcomed Elversberg to Gelsenkirchen for the very first time. These two sides have had upturns of late, but Elversberg, after the defeat to St. Pauli, were hoping to get back to winning ways as well. In what was to be the night of nights for Elversberg, they took the lead on 7 minutes. A turnover in the offensive half for Schalke, and Paul Stock was given time, space, could have ordered a coffee, could have had lunch. It was a Schalke team that was at sixes and sevens defensively, and Stock with an excellent finish past Justin Heckeren. Heckeren in goal for Ralf Fährmann, who was injured in the warm-up. Not much Heckeren could have done. I think it was just a good quality finish to make it 1-0. They would make it 2 just 14 minutes later. Stock with the assist this time. A good diagonal ball to Yannick Rockhout. Just touches it and then has a dip. And what a finish. Off the post and in. It was so delicate. The elegance of the shot, this curling, dipping ball, and Heckeren was at full stretch, and even him, someone who's got a lot of size to him as a goalkeeper, height-wise, had no chance, just such a precision strike. And 2-0 after 21, and Elversberg would have thought they were in dreamland. But Schalke started to turn the screws after the 2-0. They did get their goal on 35 minutes. A wonderful ball from Thomas Elverjan, and Keenan Karaman got his third goal of the campaign. Schalke pressed and pressed forward for an equalising goal. And they did a lot of it from set pieces. Thomas Elverjan in particular, he whipped in some unbelievably high-quality crosses. But the Schalke team couldn't finish. You know, Lasma had a chance. Karaman had many chances in the second half. There was one scene that Nikola Kristoff pulled off this unbelievable save at the death. But Schalke couldn't find the equalising goal. Elversberg, it was their day of days. Beating Schalke is a massive achievement for their club. But they were good in this game, especially the early phases. One thing they did three things really well. And that was creating situations where Schalke were immensely disorganised and a bit confused what to do defensively. When they got into quick transitions, those diagonal runs behind the defense, you look at the first goal and you can actually, there's a great camera view of behind the goal. And you can see Kaminski's unsure if he should take the runner or come back and take the player. And he kind of gets caught in no man's land. Merkin is much the same. Should he take the overlapping runner? Kallas is essentially whatever ball would have been played. That offensive player, I think it was Schnellbacher, would have been onside. And it was just amazing how Stock could have done anything. He could have kept dribbling inside the box because Kaminski was still a fair ways away. And Matriciani wasn't really in sort of the scene. So there was there was a lot to like about their transition game. The second goal was so good when Schalke wanted to play super tight and almost pin Elversberg into that sort of near touchline. Stock with just a gorgeous ball. And you just want Matriciani to, who had that scene, just have a little bit more pressure on Rockhelt. You know Rockhelt's most likely not going to go to his left. And, it's a cracking finish. But I was surprised that after 2-0, when you could almost sit back, you might want to hit Schalke on the break. Would have loved to have seen more actions for Elversberg on the left-hand side. Like, they were having great success attacking the Ovaljan Mürken vicinity. I think going at Matriciani would have also been quite good. The one thing that is probably the one thing that they'll look at is set-piece defending. It wasn't strong. Schalke had their chances from set-pieces. Like, don't get me wrong. You know, if you want to criticise one thing that Elversberg didn't do particularly well, it was set-piece defending. Goal comes from set-piece. But crosses into the box were dangerous. They had nine of the 23 shots on goal for Schalke. Nine of them came from set-piece situations. And I think that's the positive for Schalke, is that with Thomas Ovaljan, we know his deficiencies defensively. So you get him into attacking situations, you get him on the ball at set pieces. Like, the man can put in a cross. There's no question about his individual quality. That left foot is like gold. He will put in a good ball. He gives the attacking players an opportunity to get a shot on goal. And he did that throughout this game. Now, had Schalke been a bit more effective in their chances, they might get a result here. But take nothing away from Elversberg. They were very good. And they continue what has been a stellar season for them. They sit ninth currently, 21 points. Now, we talked about it with Wiesbaden last week. They're very much in the same boat, where 34 to 36 is usually the cutoff line. 21 points after 13 games in their first ever season in the second tier. It's been mightily impressive what Horst Steffen has done. It has been incredible. And when they return, Paderborn at Hertha versus Nürnberg. You know, Nürnberg are in their range at the moment. Paderborn have struggled, and Hertha, you know, Hertha are sort of slowly building, although we'll talk about them in Group 2. So it's been a great season for them. In this Group 2, I should say. It's been great for them. They've done really well. Schalke, on the other hand, at Fortuna Düsseldorf in the Topspiel. That's a world feed game. Very tough game that's going to be for them. Versus Osnabrück at home, and then at Hansa Rostock. So, yeah, a good chance to rebuild. I think they're a better team as with Lazmer and Karaman as their top two. They seem to work quite well together. I know Lazmer didn't score in this game; he had his chances. But what they do with, like, Simon Terodde, we saw Kiki Tops now, the fourth striker, Sebastian Pulter seems to be out of the rotation entirely. So, like, if there was, like, a Zweite Bundesliga team that needed a striker on, like, a six-month loan, I was like, I'd probably give Schalke a call and say, hey, let's deal. Let's see if we can get a striker to help us out, especially if you're a team in the lower half, because I just don't see Poulter really playing a part in Gerrard's system at the moment. Did mention Hertha, as they've got Elversberg in a few weeks' time. Let's talk about them. They welcomed Karlsruhe to the Olympiastadion. This was one of those fan friendship games. It was, you know, well presented, and the Blau und Weiss was very much prominent. It was an interesting game. 2-2 the final score. Azai Fuchs on goal. Fabian Reza, Niederlechner got on the goals for Hertha, and then Leon Jensen, 9 minutes from normal time, got the equalising goal. It's a weird one, because, like, Karlsruhe had their chances. They almost stole it at the death. Tony Leister made an excellent tackle on Lars Stindl. And that would have felt wrong, result-wise. I think Karlsruhe really... I don't know. There's something amiss with what's going on. The two goals they scored, the first one's an own goal, which Jerome Gondorf tried really hard to claim, but you're not going to fool anyone. And the second one took two unbelievable deflections. Real ping-pong style goal. And Tiago Ernst had, like, you know, you once you see the first deflection, you make the move, and the second one got him all ends up. It was pretty rough, but yeah, the sometimes the lack of quality in the final third is killing Karlsruhe a bit. Although, like, Matanovic had his moments for sure, and he forced a couple of good saves from Ernst. But yeah, I don't know. There's something amiss, and with Hertha, like, I feel like we know what they are. Really good at attacking the wide spaces. Both the goals came from crosses. The second one, in particular, Tabakovic does really well to get the ball back centrally, and then Niederlechner climbing over the top of Gondorf, and you know, there might be the thought of a foul. I think the funniest scene of that is that Niederlechner jumps. He doesn't see the ball. Just hits his head and it goes in. But you'll claim that they all count the same. They count as goals. But one thing that's really clear with Hertha is how good Fabian Riese is. So, like, when he left Schalke, he did that loan stint at Greuther Fürth. There was the sort of thought that he could be something. He was great at Kiel, especially his last two seasons, where he really developed into being a top-tier Zweite Bundesliga player. And it hurt her, be a slow start early on. He's really kicked on to being such an important part of this team. But they, I don't want to say it, but like they probably could have won. They probably should have won this game. Like their scenes offensively were a little bit better. The quality of scoring chances were much higher. But yeah, they left a little bit on the table. And even though they're unbeaten in their last three games, with a win and two draws, there's a sort of an emptiness that maybe we should have got a little bit more out of that game. But that's, I guess that's football in many ways. One thing that I've enjoyed seeing is the development of Tjaak Ernst. Now, I remember at the start of the season when you had Christensen, you had Gersbeck, there was a thought that maybe Ernst gets a loan deal somewhere to get some regular football. Then you had they sold Christensen to Fiorentina. You had the Gersbeck incident during training camp, and suddenly Ernst becomes the number one. But he's been worth it. His development has been really strong. And like, you can exclude the Magdeburg game because that was just a silly 6-4 game. And sometimes, no matter how good a goalkeeper can be in those games, you're overshadowed by the number of goals you conceded. But he's been good. Both those goals weren't his fault. That was just quite unfortunate. And he put himself in good positions to make a play. There's not much you can do about a double deflection at the best of times. But you always wonder at the start of the season what this team looks like if they have Marius Gersbeck in goal. Like, if I look at, like, individually, someone who's thrown away the opportunity that was begging to be theirs, I look at Gersbeck as someone who would have been the number one. He would have known when he signed with Hertha that Christensen maybe 50-50 whether he stays, and he was going to be the de facto one. But I can't see a situation at the moment where Gersbeck's going to get on the field, unless, of course, Ernst has an injury, but we don't want to see that. So, yeah, really impressed with Ernst, and his positioning is something, and his footwork is quite solid. Just want to see more of that progression as the season gets on. We'll see how they go against Hanover. And as we mentioned, they've got Elversberg at home in December, then off to Kaiserslautern, which will actually be quite an interesting game when those two go head-to-head. Karlsruhe, they've got Nürnberg, and then it's Hansa Rostock and then Hanover in their next three. But yeah, before we get to the end of the Hinrunde, let's make a move to Fürth. Greuther Fürth welcomed Fortuna Düsseldorf to this Sportpark Ronhof. Thomas Sommer. Fürth have been in good form. They had won three of their last four. They were feeling really good, whilst Düsseldorf, coming off that defeat last week to Wien Wiesbaden, hoping to get back to winning ways. Fortuna weren't at full strength, and I don't want to excuse the result. I'm not going to. I'm just going to present the facts. But they were missing, I would say, probably five of the six players who were out. Five of them would start in the team, be it Shinta Appelkamp, Yannick Engelhardt, Vincent Vermey, Matthias Zimmermann, and Captain Andre Hoffmann. Ginczek also out. We know how his injury history has affected his career. But Fürth were good for the win. I think they played really well. They get the goal just after the break through Robert Wagner. Another VAR thing where we weren't sure if it was offside. They took a bit of time to look at it. Eventually the goal stood. And then it just came to the defending. Jonas Erbig was really good in goal. I liked his performance. He started to grow, and I know he's going to have, you know, give it, he's 19. He's going to have games that will frustrate the hell out of you, where it seems like it's not coming together. But he was great in this game. Earned the clean sheet. And it just, yeah, like you love what they do. We know they're a strong pressing team. They made the most of their big chances. They had two big chances. One of them was converted, the other one wasn't. But I think their chances were more sustainable. I look at Dusseldorf, and look, they tried Christos Stolis, who we know how great he's been on the left hand side of that attacking three. They tried him as a number nine, and it didn't work. They had one shot for the entirety of the game, and it just felt like they almost self limited his impact. A lot of that had to do with out of almost necessity, they brought him in to play as that number nine, given he's been so versatile throughout the campaign. But it didn't really feel like they trusted Nimic as to be the number nine. We saw Yastrzemski get the start as well, and Yastrzemski was okay in that role. But I think he's best suited to coming off the bench and sort of being a power hitter with his quickness. So yeah, it was a bit disappointing, I think, with Dusseldorf. They just it's hard to sort of establish where they were at in this game, given how limited they were in terms of availability for players. But I guess the break, much like with Hamburg, the break's a really good opportunity for them to get healthy. And we'll see where they go. They've got Schalke when we come back, and I think they'll feel really comfortable about that game. Fürth have Wiesbaden as we return. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our final three games of Matchday 13, starting at the Home Deluxe Arena as Paderborn hosted Nürnberg. Paderborn, after a resounding win in Karlsruhe the week before, were hoping to make it two when they welcomed Nürnberg to the Home Deluxe Arena on the weekend. But they really didn't play like a team in the first half that were up for it, and Nürnberg capitalised with relative ease. Jens Kastrup opening the scoring on 8 minutes, and then just before the break, Kanji Okanuki and Lucas Schleimer got their third goals each for the season and made it 3-0 heading into the break. The game got a little bit more interesting after half-time when Jens Kastrup sent off and Paderborn got a goal with 12 minutes of normal time to play through Adriano Grimaldi. Paderborn huffed and puffed, but they couldn't blow down the house built by Christian Matenia. Matenia was fantastic in this game and kept this overall score as a 3-1 victory for Nürnberg. It's been a really positive start for the club. Eighth in the table, zero goal difference, like the teams from 8th to 10th. 21 points, significantly improved side from the one of last. I thought Paderborn in the first half were quite poor. If you look at the goals they conceded, the second one is interesting because defensively, it was as if it was in slow motion. But offensively, from a Nürnberg perspective, it was fantastic. Great passing move. It started with Okanuki winning the ball at halfway, and quick passes with Özun and Schleimer, and Özun gets. Can Özun makes the ball to Okanuki, who eventually rounds Yannick Hoot for the goal. Like that's what Nürnberg want to identify as, a team that when in turnover, those transitions, quick short passes, and getting a shot on goal. Like that is sort of the identity that Christian Fjell football is about. It's about turnover to transition, and they did it effectively in this game, especially in the first half. The second half, there's probably not much impetus. They did have a goal disallowed early in the second half, which would have made it 4-0. And at that point, there would have been some eyes rolling on a weekend where you had the stuff in Braunschweig and they had the game in Kiel at the same time. It was quite an extraordinary passage of play. But I guess with Paderborn, you know, their best form really came when Nürnberg went down to 10 men. They really grabbed control of the game. you know, 26 shots on goal in the game. They doubled the amount of opportunities, but it was the effectiveness of the shots that they had. Only 9 of those were on target, whereas Nürnberg had 13 shots with 8 on target. The XG, you know, again, you know, Paderborn were on top in that statistical category. And you look at all the stats and you're like, well, how did they not win the game? Such was the dominance of the statistical output, but the reality is the game's played on the pitch, not on the stat sheet. And you love what Matenya was doing as a goalkeeper. Real firm, and there wasn't much he could have done about the Grimaldi goal. It's just a perfectly placed header. Happened so quickly, but yeah, it feels like a bit of a fork in the road situation for Paderborn. And I know that can come off as, well, that's a bit harsh. But it hasn't been a great season. There's a clear... They're a bit uncertain of what they want to be. Yeah, they missed Florent Muslier. We probably can't undersell how big of a miss it was to not have him available for this game. And maybe that's a different... It becomes a different circumstance. But I think their depth has been challenged. At times, they don't often... You know, what does their midfield look like? It seems to be a revolving cast of players. Same with the attack. I think Grimaldi's been the only one that you can feel confident about. You want Sirlo Conte to be consistent. And the Max Kruse situation just continues to sort of develop as one that... You just don't know whether he... is available. You just don't know if he's really up for it. And it's difficult. It just doesn't feel like a transfer that's worked. And, you know, maybe there'll be more news that comes out later on as we progress through the end of November and December. That Elversberg game, when they come back, becomes really massive because Elversberg are in great form. They're playing great football. Excuse me, and Paderborn up and down recently. So I wonder what they're going to do. It is interesting. They obviously don't have the resources as many other teams in the league, but you know they've still got a good coach and they've got a good footballing philosophy. It's just wonder they can turn it around. Nürnberg, where they've got Karlsruhe when we return, and they'll feel that's a winnable game given the form and what Nürnberg are doing at offensively anyway. Real opportunity to prey on a team that still has its defensive deficiencies. So we'll see how they get on with that game. A team that is very much overachieving from what was expected heading into this season is Vane Wiesbaden. 3 wins on the bounce heading into this game against Kaiserslautern. Could they make it 4? Well, it wasn't ideal when they conceded ball for half-time. A Marlon Ritter thunderbuster is getting past Florian Stritzel. But the second half was very much Vane's to take, and to take it they did. Timan Goppel scored on 51 minutes, and then Ivan Pretain, who missed an opportunity in the first half, he made up for it with a goal that was potentially fortuitous, but regardless, they all count the same. Robin Hoyce's free kick, which he was definitely going for goal, and as you do, once the free kick comes in, you try and attack the sort of the line of where the ball could be. The ball actually cannons into Pretain's sort of darting run off his chest and past Julian Kral. The win means that Wiesbaden are now 7th in the table with 21 points, leading the group of teams. Oh, sorry, 3rd of the teams. It's kind of crazy. 5th to 9th have 21 points. And if you love little statistics, the top half of the standings is separated by only 6 points. It's been a fantastic season so far, and Wiesbaden have been one of the surprise packets of the season. But we've talked about it throughout the course of the season. Defensively, they're so good. And the goal they gave up was just a really well-worked goal. Ball came in from the wide areas. Boyd sort of lays it off to Ritter, and Ritter just puts his foot through it. Other than that, not many notable opportunities for Kaiserslautern. They had 5 shots in the game, 1 on target, and that 1 on target was the Ritter goal. So we know what they're doing. They love to limit teams' high-quality opportunities in the box. They want teams to shoot from distance. And if you're good enough to beat the defense and the goalkeeper from range, they'll tip your cap and deal with it. But defensively, fantastic. And they're good at creating opportunities. They had chances to get a 3rd or a 4th. You know, Iredale had that effort, which took a slight deflection and forced a really good save from Kral. It's incredible. They're probably one of the teams that don't like the international break at the moment. In terms of their form, it's inopportune for them. They are the form team of the Zweite Bundesliga in their last five games, 13 points out of 15. The only one that comes close is Fürth with 12 and St. Pauli with 11. So it's been quite an incredible campaign for them. What they do very well though is they get the sort of the wing back midfielders, the wide players. You know, we spoke about it last week with Gorpul and Kartic and really excelling at, you know, taking one-on-one situations with fullbacks, or if that other team is playing a back three with the two wide players playing further forward, really exploiting those spaces and forcing those sort of left-sided centre-backs to make a decision. And they really force Kaiserslautern into a really difficult situation. So I think there's a lot to like with what they're doing. But they were the better team in this game. They deserved the 3 points. They were far more industrious than their opponents. And Marcus Kaczynski is in a really good situation at the moment where, as we said with Elversberg, if we're getting much further forward in the season, they're putting themselves in a situation where they might not have to worry about that relegation playoff fight when that starts to tense up. But of course, there's still plenty of football to be had. But so far, 13 matches into the 34-match season, things are going good for them. They got Greuther Fürth when they return away, then Kiel away, and then Eintracht Braunschweig. Kaiserslautern welcome Kiel before a trip to Magdeburg. And then they welcome Hertha to the Fritz Walter Stadion. Let's talk about Magdeburg, because since that 6-4 win against Hertha, they have been on an unbelievable slide. They needed to get some points, and they welcomed Hansa Rostock to the MDCC Arena. They started well. They opened the scoring just 4 minutes in. Herbert Bockhorn with his first goal of the campaign. This was a game absolutely dominated in the first half by Magdeburg. So many chances, whether it was Cheka, whether it was Attic. Schuler had that unbelievably golden chance late in the first half where he just doesn't get any purchase on the ball. One thing that was clear in this game is that Marcus Kolka, after conceding the first goal, well, he wasn't going to concede a second. He produced a vintage performance in goal, and he gave the Hansa Rostock a chance, and that was a chance they would take straight after halftime. Dennis Dressel takes aim from distance. It's that awkward height for a goalkeeper where the ball's sort of bouncing in front of you, you know, a couple of feet, and you have to make a decision whether you're going to put your body behind it or do what Dominic Reimann did, which is he was a very non-committal, I'm going to try and pad the ball to the side, and the ball skips under the gloves and into the back of the net, and the travelling Hansa supporters were in raptures. Still, Magdeburg pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed, couldn't find the equaliser, and as the game progressed, you just felt like, it's either going to be a draw or they're about to concede. On 86 minutes, they would concede the game-winning goal. Alexander Rosipal's corner, which was just delicate. It outrageous to even attempt that kind of cross at the time he did. Over the top of Reimann, it cannons off the post. It cannons off the arm of Connor Krumpicki's forearm and into the back of the net. And they were kind of replaying it in the highlights show for Sky of, well, maybe that could be... Because there's two hands there, and it seems pretty clear that Krumpicki, it comes off his hand, and they could say, oh, that should be a penalty instead of a goal. The goal was given, I think, correct decision on their part. Big win for Hansa, given the situation they've been over the last, you know, couple of months. It's been quite miserable for them. Massive win. Huge win. Confidence boosting. You know, they've been so horrible goal-wise. 13 goals now this season. He had 11 heading into the match day. Defensively, the defense has held it together when it's looked very dubious at times. And they needed a bit of luck, but sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. So they can thank Marcus Kolka, who either should get a life-size supply of Vita-Cola or whichever alcoholic beverage is favoured in Rostock, because he produced an unbelievable performance. He had 7 saves in the game. And they were not like easy saves. There were some top draw goalkeeping. Great footwork. Gets into great positions and really commands the box. It's what you love about a goalkeeper, really. I know I've talked about a lot of goalkeepers this match day, but in a week where there are a ton of goals going in, you know, there were several high quality goalkeeping performances. In what was such a crucial game for Rostock, we got to see Kolka really return to what's made him one of the best shot stoppers in the division. It was really impressive to see. When they play St. Pauli next, against St. Pauli at home, that's going to be fascinating. I'm really interested to see that game and see if they can find a way through one of the best defences in the division. It's Osnabrück for Magdeburg, and if we're talking about big games next time around when we come back from the break, that is certainly one of them. It's going to be a fascinating game to watch, and I can't wait to see if there's anything that happens between now and then. That's it from me. I'm going to take a breather, a couple of weeks off from the podcast. I hope you're all doing well. Thank you again for listening to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Looking forward to talking about Matchday 14 when we return towards the end of November. So enjoy the time off. Maybe catch up on some international football, do something else. But all I know is the Zweite Bundesliga will be back very shortly. We'll see you soon when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.